Hello, team. Welcome back to the Athletes Podcast, the show that aims to educate athletes, their parents, coaches, veterans, rookies, role players, young up-and-comers, whoever wants to learn. We're here to spread knowledge and teach you how to become the best athlete, high performer, and ultimately a human being that you can be. I'm your host, David Stark. Jordan Maslin is our producer, and today I have the pleasure of talking with Rob McLeod, also known as Frisbee Rob. In this episode, we talk about a couple of the 10 disc sports that he plays, his work on the World Flying Disc Federation Board of Directors, and how they are working on getting Ultimate into the Olympics. We'll see if they happen in 2021, 2022, more news to come. But he's a professional disc golfer, and we talk about how the sport has been growing, especially during COVID over the past year. How the work he does in schools is making such an incredible impact, more specifically, where his focus on physical literacy and challenging kids to get unplugged is important. This man has talked with over 130,000 kids across Canada in schools, might be North America now at this point. Just a ton in this episode, some good laughs. We answer one listener question from Mamad Marco. If you have a question for one of our upcoming guests, be sure to follow us on social media to get your questions posted and in there so that we can ask them. Simply a great conversation with a great guy that has some Canadian flavor to it. This hashtag Athletic Thursday quote that we've been incorporating into our episodes is as followed. Do you know what my favorite part of the game is? The opportunity to play. And this quote comes from Mike Singletary and is a great way to transition into this fantastic conversation. Thank you guys for continuing to listen. We are available to watch on YouTube. I'm super excited to share Rob's story. I hope you enjoy. Please welcome Rob McLeod to the 66th episode of the Athletes Podcast. Here we go. Good. Are you a Calgary Flames fan?
So my story with this, so I grew up in the Maritimes and I used to be a huge hockey fan. I played hockey as well growing up. And then when the Canadians traded Patrick Waugh, that broke my heart and I stopped watching hockey pretty much. So,
wow. No way. Yeah, that's crazy.
It was pretty rough.
I can only imagine. I wasn't really paying attention to hockey at that age, but I definitely know now and kind of understand. That was crazy when he walked right up onto the bench, basically told him, I'm done, hey?
Yeah. I can basically see the Saddle Dome from where I live now. My girlfriend's a huge Flames fan. Hmm. So I'll probably be getting back into hockey a bit. I usually watch, the Olympics for hockey and things like that. So it's, I don't know. And she's dancing. Yeah, she's pretty happy with that.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, I had to throw on the Canucks jersey because they play tonight, and I didn't know what kind of rivalry we were going to have here over this conversation, so I had to make sure I covered all my bases.
Well, I love it.
Well, first of all, Rob, thank you very much for coming on the Athletes Podcast, man. It's an honor to have you on. I'm excited to chat with Frisbee Rob, this elusive man who's got all these different accolades. And I guess first off, the best way to start this would be if you could just dive into kind of who you are, what you do, how you've come to be Frisbee Rob.
For sure. So growing up, I played all the sports possible, pretty much everything except Frisbee. I really didn't play Frisbee as a kid and was athlete in grade 12, played hockey, track and field, soccer, rugby, and then got into Frisbee first year university. This was before YouTube. That was back in 2000, 2001. So learned how to throw, then discovered Ultimate Frisbee and played that for about 9 years. Started posting videos and teaching people how to play Ultimate and was called Ultimate Rob for a while. Still am kind of Ultimate Rob. But then learned about dog disc and learned about the overall, learned about disc golf. And so the way that I best can explain it is Frisbee is a lot like track and field. So there's different disciplines. So Ultimate is a discipline. Disc golf is a discipline. And so I compete, teach, promote all the disciplines, and I really teach it as Frisbee. And then you can get into different things within Frisbee. Like yesterday I was skating with some friends and we were playing, on skates. We were just throwing a disc back and forth, playing monkey in the middle, just having fun with it. And so the famous quote is, when a ball dreams, it dreams it's a Frisbee. And so for me, it's really embodied that. Like, I love sports. I love throwing. I love, you know, I used to do shot put and discus, but there's nothing to me more magical than throwing a frisbee and just watching it and making it fly through the air. And so with that, I've had a lot of opportunities to meet people who were really at the forefront of the sport of flying disc way back in the 70s. And so I've been able to interview them. Now they're my friends and my mentors. And so I'm trying to carry on the work that they've been doing for 50 years. And I've also been able to set some world records. I have 6 Guinness World Records, waiting on 3 more to be approved. And then I'm going to be going after some next summer on inline skates. So yeah, it's been pretty interesting. My full-time job is actually speaking in schools and teaching Frisbee and getting the idea of physical literacy in schools. I really believe that I wouldn't be the athlete I am today if I hadn't played other sports growing up. And so whenever I hear an athlete say, you know, oh, I wish I would have gotten into this when I was younger, I kind of cringe, because it's the things we did when we were younger that really helped drive what we do today. And so me being a figure skater and then a hockey player, I can now go throw Frisbee on ice skates. If I would have done Frisbee from a young age, I never would have had the skating skills. And so I think physical literacy is so important. It's kind of at the forefront as well. Pat Mahomes, right, is, you know, was a huge multi-sport athlete. And so I really think there's a lot of value in that. Living in Calgary for as long as I have, I've seen the impact of people who only focus on one sport. You know, a lot of Olympians live in Calgary and they'll do their sport for 4 years or 8 years and then they're done. And mm-hmm. So it's, how can we have movement and physical activity for life and not just have it as you have to compete in something? There's tons of kids that are quitting sports at the age of 13. Either they're getting cut from a team or there's not enough coaches or things like that. So how can we bring all of this in? And I do that with Frisbee as my vehicle.
I was so excited when you reached out and expressed interest in coming on. I like just everything that you're about as far as this unplugged program that you've got running, this, you know, fostering a good physical literacy, to your point there on, you know, having kids participate in activities and, you know, be a part of games outside of whether it's on a rep team or the best team. It doesn't necessarily have to be. It's just getting out and doing these things and playing, getting back to playing, similar to Skylar Thomas's interview we had a couple weeks ago, the soccer player who created Kick Deck. I'm so on board with it all, and I'm really excited. I just want to, you know, dive in a bit more about what you've done with Frisbee in particular, because it's an interesting sport. I mean, like you said, it's not something that you would have necessarily gotten into if you hadn't skated earlier when you were younger or been a figure skater, all those things. So, you know, how do you get into Frisbee, specifically ultimate flying discs? Like, it's a unique sport. You don't just necessarily, like javelin with Liz Gleedle, you don't just jump right into find a Frisbee and start playing it.
No, and growing up, there was moments where I could have done something like, you know, I had a couple Frisbees as a kid, played a couple games of ultimate Frisbee when I was in high school, but it never really stuck. We didn't have a team. There was not a league. And so I could have been like that one kid that did it by myself. But I really think it's so important to do the sports that you may not have the opportunity to do when you're older. And so for me to play hockey, and my high school hockey team won provincials 2 years in a row. So those are two highlights in my life that'll always be there. Got to, you know, spend a lot of time with my friends. And so, you know, I'm seeing that now where, you know, unless there's the opportunity for people to play and there's a bunch of other people, it's hard to get kids into that sport because, you know, it sort of isolates them. And so Frisbee just wasn't really an option at all. I didn't know what was possible. This was before YouTube. So it wasn't something where I could just go explore and figure out, you know, go and watch a bunch of videos. Even though these sports have been around for 40 plus years, it just wasn't accessible to me. And so it was discovering that community. And then people always say like Frisbee finds them. And I think that was a big thing for me. A big part of me getting into Frisbee was after my mom passed away. So she passed away after first year university. Frisbee became sort of my way to grieve. And so I'd go out and just throw by myself, discovered just the joy of flight. And no matter what sport, if it's hockey, soccer, people love the community. They stay with the sport usually because of the community, or they quit the sport because of the community. But for me, I was really drawn to Frisbee because of the Frisbee. There's a clip from Family Guy where I think he says to his dad, you know, why doesn't somebody invent the Frisbee? That's an awesome toy. And somebody's like, you know, it's already been invented. but it's so true. It's just such a fun toy. You know, I don't know of any other sport where people actually collect the objects of play. Like, how many people have 1,000 basketballs or 1,000 soccer balls at home? Mm-hmm. I have a friend who has 40,000 Frisbees. And, you know, there's Frisbee selling right now online for like $500. You know, a guy just sold a disc for $2,700 or something. It was a signed disc. Cool. And he's a YouTuber as well. He's disc golfer, became YouTuber, does a bit of both. But yeah, they're collectible discs. I have discs that are from the 70s still. So there's a lot of subculture, a lot of different pockets within it.
Right.
And a hard thing this year, obviously, has been, so I watched the podcast with Jeremy Hill. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on the board of directors for the World Flying Disc Federation, and we've now canceled all events in 2021. So it's as well, like, if you can't play ultimate because of social distance or physical distancing, well, disc golf you can play, or you can play catch with a friend, or you can do self-caught play, which is my favorite. So you throw and catch your own throw. You can do freestyle tricks. And so there's a lot you can't do, but there's still a lot that you can do. And so I really think that's what Frisbee helps bring out, is what are the things that are possible.
Yeah. Disc golf has just absolutely exploded. Especially over COVID. It was actually coming, it was building prior to COVID, but I think this is kind of the jump it needed. You know, golf grew exceptionally, disc golf just right behind it as well. I want to touch on the fact you've spoken at more than 400 schools now, over 135,000 kids since 2015. With the Athletes Podcast, one of the things we're trying to do is educate the next generation of athletes, showcase what professionals like yourself are doing to stay in sport, to stay active, and what your routines, habits are that make you so successful. Obviously that's something that's a standout to you, is making an impact on the next generation as well. How do you go about that? Because, you know, Frisbee might not be the most exciting sport to showcase compared to football or hockey for a 10 or 12 year old kid. How do you really sell them on it?
It's so easy to sell them. And you can make it exciting. Because one of the things is, if I'm in a gym, I'll do a trick shot. So I throw a Frisbee and basketball net. Mm-hmm. And you have kids like falling over and clapping and laughing and cheering, and just their minds are blown. I find it super easy to sell. Like, if I would have been doing hockey, how could I sell hockey in a gym full of kids? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I took a slap shot, I do some tricks with the puck, but I find Frisbee way easier to sell. And you get them almost just craving touching the disc and playing Frisbee. And that's really what helps sell it, is you do all these tricks, you show them some cool things, and then you have workshops. And there's a lot of amazing videos. The nice thing about disc golf compared to golf is that it's a lot easier to get an ace or a hole in one. And so I have, I think, 20 hole in ones in disc golf. I have friends that have over 100. And so there's a lot more videos of hole in ones in disc golf, and to just actually watch the disc fly in the air versus a ball sort of lands, rolls in the cup. It's way more exciting to watch that disc hit the chains. And so I find, you know, it is an easy sport to sell it. And working in the marketing side of it, you know, it's, some sports are hard to sell, like hockey or football. They have the, you know, a helmet or mask on, whereas basketball is super marketable because there's, you know, you can sort of connect with them a lot easier. And ultimate as well is tough to sell because it's a team sport. And so to have individual athletes and ultimate sort of stepping up on social media just feels kind of weird, because it's like you're promoting yourself, but then you're part of a team. Disc golf, it's super easy because you have disc golfers posting videos of them practicing putting and out on the course all the time and selling discs and getting sponsored. And so there's a lot of money in disc golf. The top disc golfer in the world just signed, well, sorry, a couple of years ago, signed a 4-year deal worth $1 million.
Wow.
And he just bought a McLaren 2 months ago. It's like a $250,000 car. And so, you know, he's the first disc golfer for sure who's making over $1 million. We think he might even be hitting $1 million per year with all of the endorsements and things like that. But when you get into a sport where there's a lot of money for manufacturers, then you start seeing things happen because they can actually put money behind players. Whereas an ultimate, the average ultimate player doesn't even own a disc, because, you know, for an entire team, you might have 2 or 3 discs and that's all you need. And so with the average disc golfer, they might have 30, 40 discs, you know, a disc golf bag, a practice basket, So it's been interesting kind of looking at that. And there's some good data coming out that we think there will be more disc golf courses in the US than golf courses in the next 10 years.
Wow.
Because it's way cheaper to install a disc golf course. Takes a lot less space. And there's a lot less maintenance. You don't need to be wiring the fairways all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's been really interesting. Like, I love golf. I grew up playing golf. My sister is, you know, provincial champion. And I barely golf because disc golf is just so easy to just go out and play. It's free to play most courses. You don't have to book a tee time. So it's been interesting discovering this and really learning how to pitch this to people and kids and how to get them into it. You know, obviously, you know, you're wearing a Canucks jersey, so there's a lot of money behind the Canucks brand as well. So there's incentive for them to promote their sport to kids. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, the faces of the team, and the kids are looking up and saying, I want to be like that person. So Frisbee's starting to get to that point now where people want to be like a certain player, which has been pretty cool to see.
Yeah, that's incredible. I to be honest, I didn't know that it was growing at that pace. And I think actually you are one of the main forces, driving forces behind it all. Obviously, one of the coolest things is the fact that you are Canadian and you love bringing up that Canadian heritage. You've got that culture ingrained. You're throwing Frisbees with skates on. Like, that part is so cool to me. It's one of the things we're trying to also do is featuring Canadian athletes, because I think, you know, we're unique. We've got this all terrain. You're willing to go out and throw the Frisbee around in negative weather. It doesn't matter what the temperatures are like. You're just willing to get after it. And you've got all these accolades. You've got 6 Guinness World Records, 13 World Championships. You just seek out these opportunities where you saw that, hey, this record isn't there yet and I think I can beat it. Or, you know, what's the mindset approaching it? Do you just love being able to get your name etched into the Guinness Book of World Records every year?
Yeah. So a couple things. One is the first record I ever set was distance to a dog. And that was not a Guinness World Record. That was for a federation called Skyhounds. And that was back in 2011. And so I remember seeing my name on the website thinking, cool, this is a thing. Like, I can throw it pretty far and this dog's really fast and this is interesting. And then I did some research and found out what the world record was for the actual longest throw to a dog, which was a Guinness World Record. So I'm like, okay, I can throw that far. I have the discs. This dog is super fast. Let's try and go after that. And then I was contacted by a TV station in China. I was actually flown to Beijing to be on a TV show to attempt my first Guinness World Record, whoa, which was an epic fail. had no idea what I was doing. Didn't bring enough of the right discs. Didn't really have a brand, didn't really know how to entertain people. So yeah, it was interesting. Didn't break the record, but they suggested that I come home and attempt it. So I did, and I broke the record. And so there's many different categories of Guinness World Records. Mm-hmm. But for me, the ones that I really like breaking are the ones that are already, official with Diff World Records. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like Michael Phelps, when he breaks a world record in the pool, that becomes the Guinness World Record as well. Mm-hmm. He could go out and do some, you know, made up world record, you know, in a backyard in a pond or something, but that's not going to be the official, like, FINA world record. Mm. And so I like setting world records that are recognized by the Frisbee body as well. And so I just kind of look at the database and I'm like, okay, well, I know pretty much everybody that has all the world records. The cool thing about Frisbee is you can, different age group world records. And so, you know, over 35, 45, 55, 65. So the neat thing is, although I can't compete against my friends in their prime, I can go against their records that they set in their prime. And so my friend Phil, Frisbee Phil, he calls himself, with a PH. He's awesome. And, 2 years ago, he set the over 70 world record for throwing and catching his own throw. And he told me, I can't wait to see you break that record, which would mean that he would be then setting the over 100 world record. Like, he's 72, he's diving on the ground after Frisbees. And so I'm trying to do my best now so people coming up in 10 years can try and break my best. And so it's kind of neat that way, because it keeps you motivated throughout life. It gives you something to keep striving after. Mm-hmm. And so we see a lot of athletes in Frisbee who are playing in their 50s and 60s and 70s. And there's a guy named Don Shim who just broke the over 100 world record for distance. And so it keeps you young. It keeps you exploring and having fun with things. And yeah, it's been interesting. I've been in two Guinness books of world records. Have not had my picture in the book yet, but I had to buy both books. They don't just give you the book for free.
No way.
So yeah. And it's been neat. It's been really cool. And so I want to, you know, I want to set more world records. It's a bit of a process, but it's been a really fun thing to have. And it obviously helps me get into schools.
Yeah.
Helps me, you know, get credibility with people, but it's just really trying to push my limits and see what I'm capable of. I've been there when people have broken other records. There's a lot of records that I will never be able to break. I just don't have, you know, that's not my skill set. Mm-hmm. And so I think by me chasing my potential, it inspires other people to chase their potential as well.
Totally.
And just helps raise the level of everything.
Is it come with different, like, so coming from golf, hockey, the technology with these sports get better, you know, a golf, the shaft is going to get better. The club face is going to get better, go farther. Is that the same with frisbees? Is that going to make it difficult for you to, or I guess it would be easier for you being younger, having the technology improve as you age?
Yeah, you nailed it. So, you know, 30, 40 years ago, the discs that they were throwing were very limited.
Right.
So it'd be like trying to hit a golf ball with the wooden clubs. You know, I grew up using the wooden clubs. Now you have these, you know, crazy carbon fiber, whatever, right? Clubs that will hit the ball a lot further. You have better balls. Mm-hmm. So exactly. Yeah. You have the technology is incredible. They do have limits on the discs as far as the rim width and mm-hmm. then the profile. And so we have a speed rating. And so the higher the speed, in theory, the further the disc will actually go, but it also requires more power to throw that disc.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, learning how different discs fly is a skill in itself. And so coming from an ultimate background where you only ever throw one disc, mm-hmm. getting into disc golf where types of plastics and mold, it's pretty crazy just what you can sort of explore in that. And a big thing that people do now in the wintertime is glow disc golf.
Okay.
And so that plastic, I was just talking to a friend of mine last week. And so he said that plastic is just taking leaps and bounds. And so he can now charge a disc with a flashlight and then that disc will stay lit for like 10 minutes.
Whoa.
So you can go out, you know, when it's pitch black and you can play disc golf and you put lights on the basket. You can also just play catch with each other. So it's, yeah, there's a lot of cool things that, like you said, because we live in, you know, Canada with snow, people get creative with that and they'll tape ribbons on their discs sometimes as well. That doesn't help the flight, but it allows people to go play at least.
Crazy. And like you said, with disc golf, there's, you know, you might have 30 or 40 different discs in your bag, you know, having for different, is that like hitting a draw or a fade in golf where you've got different motions that the frisbee is going to be going?
Yeah. And so in golf, you know, when you first start, you want to try and hit the ball straight. Mm-hmm. And if you mess up, it's, you know, hook or slice. And then when you actually learn what you're doing, it's a draw and a fade. And so in disc golf, same kind of idea. You try and throw it flat and straight. And then you learn that, oh, it can go left or right. And the nice thing is, I was playing in a charity golf tournament 2 years ago. And I hit my drive was behind a bunch of trees. The green was on the other side. And I'm just like, this is brutal because I can't take, you know, an 8-iron or 9-iron from here and hit it over the trees. Man, if I had a disc, I could just throw it around and curve it back. I'm like, this isn't fun. I'm like, you know, disc golf is way more interesting. You also don't lose as many golf discs as you lose balls, but yeah, no, it's pretty cool just the way it's shaped. So typically if you're right-handed, you throw a backhand, it's going to go to the left.
Mm-hmm.
If you throw a forehand or a sidearm, it's going to go to the right.
Right.
And so, and the opposite for left-handers.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get up to a hole, then you're like, oh, I just need a disc that's going to, you know, do this or that or whatever. So you can also roll the disc on the ground, which is really cool.
Okay.
A friend of mine has the roller world record, which is over a kilometer.
Whoa.
So once a disc gets going, the wind keeps it up. It can do some pretty wild things. And yeah, it's neat to explore some of those things that are possible and, you know, what you can actually make it do.
Yeah. I texted my uncle, David Boyce, who's also Dave, great name, name of your dog, right? Davey as well.
Davey. Yeah.
Davey. There you go. Great name. But I said, cause he's a big disc golfer. I'm like, man, I've got Frisbee Rob coming on here. I need some pointers. I need to get some insight. And he's like, man, ask him if he's a hammer thrower or do you primarily stick forehand, backhand? What are your thoughts for people who are joining the sport? Should they try it?
Good question. So a hammer or an upside down release, you release it over your head, just like you're throwing football or baseball. Mm-hmm. So a couple weeks ago, interesting story. I actually had a guy from Mississippi reach out. So I'm not doing this role right now, but I'm helping support my friend who does. So he's the record keeper for WIFDIF. He's been doing it for 40 years. He's a godfather of Frisbee. And this guy reached out saying, I'd like to attempt the overhand or the upside down world record. He's, you know, baseball player, can throw it 90 miles an hour. And so he threw it upside down and he threw it like 500 and some feet. So if you have the arm, throwing a hammer or a thumber, called a tomahawk usually as well, that's a good throw. But if you don't have the arm, then don't throw it because you will blow out your arm. And so like you look at baseball players, you know, they'll pitch one game and then 5 days later they pitch again, right? And they have the ice pack on their arm. Whereas you watch softball, people throw, you know, underhand and they can pitch every day. And so I could throw backhands thousands of throw a day without really any impact. You know, you throw 100 sidearms and it's going to start hurting your elbow. Mm-hmm. I actually have a little bit of tennis elbow from just throwing so much. So I'm trying to work through that. Good time to have an off season.
Yeah, definitely.
But hammer throws, I'll throw them once in a while if you're, you know, trying to go over top of something. But there's not many people that only throw that or primarily throw that just because of the stress on the arm. Gotcha. But it's interesting. A friend of mine throws a lot of thumbers, which is just, you just turn the disc the other way. And I'll be looking at a hole trying to figure out, you know, do I go that way or this way? And he just looks straight up and just goes over everything. So,
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's an interesting sport in the sense that, like you said, you can't just take an 8-iron out from 120 and bend it around this hole. You got to, you know, play it effectively. Whereas with a disc, you can toss it up and have it bend right back. I think with the, like to your point, the fact that it's easier for courses to be made, it's low cost. Most, you only need a couple discs really for most people to play. You might end up with 30 or 40 if you're a pro, but you know, for starters, you only need a couple. Like that's it's a sport with low barriers to entry. And I think for that reason, like you said, it's probably going to blow up. I'm really excited to see. We'll have to chat again and talk about, you know, in 5-10 years where it's at, because it'll be really interesting from a, you know, sport perspective, how much it grows in comparison to others. Because I, you know, a sport like football is probably on the decline, right? Actually, we know it is on the decline, but it's however long it'll last. Do you watch other sports? Are you a fan of other sports?
Yeah, I keep up with them, and just the nature of the work I do in schools, I'm always talking to kids about other sports. We use Finland as an example for disc golf and what could be possible. So they have, I think, about 6 million people, and they have over 250,000 people playing disc golf. Whoa. More people play disc golf in Finland than actually play hockey.
Wow.
So pretty wild that it's that big. They have 800 courses now. And so, you know, if you look at the math, I think Canada's what, 35 million?
Yeah.
So call it a factor 6. So that would be like Canada having 1.3 million disc golfers. it's pretty wild how big it is. I was in Nova Scotia, was speaking at some schools a couple of years ago, and there was this whole controversy because the government basically canceled high school rugby because of the insurance. And that's going to be the thing I think that is going to hurt football and rugby and sports like that, is the insurance rates are just going to be so high that no one is willing to pay them anymore. I love those sports. I played hockey growing up. Played rugby growing up, had a couple injuries, a couple bumps and bruises, but they're collision sports, right? Yeah. That's part of it. It's really interesting because especially where it is now, and eventually it will be a bit more pay to play, not a huge cost because you're not spending hundreds of thousands of dollars watering the grass, but pretty much anywhere I go play, I can just show up and play. I don't have to book a tee time. And so I remember my grandfather growing up, he'd have like a tee time at like, as soon as the sun came up. I went golfing with him a few times, and the first couple of holes, they hadn't even cut the greens. And so, you know, you get that nice tail of the water. Then they cut the greens and you're like, yeah, we can actually putt now. So he's out at like, you know, 6 a.m. every day. Whereas disc golf, if it's not nice weather, I don't have to go.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool that way. And yeah, just it takes less time as well, which is nice. You know, for people to go play around at a golf might take 4 hours, whereas disc golf, you can do it in half that time or even less than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, and it's neat. Like you're seeing more ultimate players getting into disc golf as well because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And so, and getting into tournaments, but there's some crossover things as well. So there's something called speed lid golf.
Okay.
So people, a lot of sort of disc golfers or frisbee players call an ultimate disc a lid just because it's a lot bigger than, you know, the diameter wise, a lot bigger than a golf disc. And so the whole point of speed lid golf is you track your score, but then you also track your time. So you run the course, track your time and your score and see how you can do with that. And so you can have, you know, depending on the course, there's a group that is really big into this in Virginia where we have a tournament every April, Fredericksburg, Virginia. And so it's, if you can get under 100, that's a good thing. So if your score is, you know, 50, whatever, and then you break 20 minutes, so you double your time. And then if you get under 100, so it's a nice way to get people playing and trying things and having a goal to go after. Just a lot of elements within this. And yeah, it's not that the other sports don't have that. It's just a bit limited, right? Like with hockey, sure, you could go just play a random game with a couple friends just fine, like, you know, a nice flat concrete pad or something. But, you know, just it's a little more limited because you need the facilities, you need that kind of stuff. And so if you're booking ice time at 11 o'clock at night, or in Calgary right now, we just went skating yesterday and the skating rinks are just jam packed. It's crazy how many people are out skating now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a little tougher as well to get out. And usually the rule is on all these outdoor rinks, no pucks, no sticks. And so it's just people skating, which is good, but what about those hockey players? Like, where can they go?
It's
sometimes tough for them to have a space.
Well, that cardio, or that timed one's interesting because it incorporates cardio to the sport as well, which it wasn't something that I considered previously, but it's, you know, it's probably a really good exercise as far as your, you know, high intensity sprint, get back to your disc, throw it again, whatever. Like, what kind of training do you do as far as making sure your performance is to that next level? It's, I assume it's kind of similar to a discus shot put where you focusing on that power at some point, but you also got to make sure you can walk the course, run the course, whatever you're doing, right?
Yeah, it's been interesting because my main thing, self-caught flight. So you throw the frisbee, you run and catch your own throw, or that's what you do in ice skates. And so I need to have the endurance, I need to have the speed, the power, but then I also need to be able to throw it. And so it is combining those and trying to figure out that mix. One thing I noticed, so in 2012, when I set the Guinness World Record with Davey, I was actually working in marketing at a gym at the time. I was training a ton. And so our first attempt was 3 days in August. In between our first 3 days and then our last 2 days in October, so we did 5 days total and like 2 months in between, I was training a ton in the gym. I showed up in October to do those final 2 days and my throw had changed because my body was, I was a bit leaner, more mobile, was spinning faster, but I hadn't been practicing enough to keep up with my body changes.
Hmm.
And so it's like years ago, I remember David Duval, you know, was a little chubby, was an amazing golfer. Then he got, you know, super fit, lost a bunch of weight and it totally changed his golf swing. And so that's sometimes a danger with frisbee is because it's so much hinge on muscle memory and it's so just precise that if you change a couple of things then it can totally throw off your throw. And so I've had to sort of balance that. And so I've been working with a trainer. He actually interned with the Anaheim Ducks.
Mm.
And I love his philosophy because a couple of years ago at the Canadian Disc Golf Championships, I had a really big leg day. The next day I drove from New Brunswick to PEI, got out of the car and my back seized and I was pretty much done. Like I tried to play nationals, but it was just awful. And so it's like, I overtrained, pushed my body too hard, but his philosophy is, you're never going to be sore from my workouts because I'm training you to be ready to compete on the field. You're not competing in the gym. And so when he interned with the Ducks, he's like, they weren't doing all these crazy movements. So it's with disc golf, it's a lot of one-legged stuff, you know, pulling, but then also sort of pushing against something. So the different, those sort of different movements, just the opposing movements. We're never doing like crunches, things like that. you know, we're working on our core, but doing it in different ways, just stresses on the body. And so he's super knowledgeable. I've been training with him for a while. I have a ton of training programs that I've been doing over the years, but I love to run. So running something that I'll always do, just, you know, not even that far. I'm never want to run a marathon. So my runs are, you know, 4 to 5 kilometers and try to do as fast as I can.
Yeah.
And so it's just, I get kind of blown away by some of these athletes now. They're pushing the limits of like the 2-hour marathon and things like that. And so it's cool because they're pushing their limits. And I'm like, okay, well, where can I push mine? Mm-hmm. Where can I go with this? And so trying to balance everything. It's been challenging during COVID because I haven't had access to a gym. So I've been working out at home. I made it work. Definitely do miss the gym. And hopefully they'll be back open soon. But it's a good time to be doing this because it's the off season. You're trying to get ready. But just looking at it as well and saying, where do I want to be 20, 30 years from now? Like, how can I be physically healthy so I can break the 70-year-old world record? I don't know if you ever listened to the Tim Ferriss show.
Yeah.
And so he had an episode with Dr. Peter Attia.
Okay.
And so Peter Attia talks about the Centenarian Olympics. And so he said, you know, when I'm 100 years old, I want to be able to lift up my great-great-grandchild over my head. So 30 pounds. He's like, what do I have to do to get there? What do I have to be lifting at 90, 80, 70, sort of working backwards? And so I don't want to kill myself in the gym just so I can squeeze out that extra 1% on the field, but then crush my body for the rest of my life. I see a lot of Frisbee players who are totally broken, getting nip and certain knee and hip replacements and things like that. And I don't want to do that. And so it's trying to just say, okay, well, what do I do today so I can get to where I want to be tomorrow?
Right. Very cool. Yeah. You talk about athletes pushing the limits. I'm in the middle of listening to David Goggins' Can't Break Me book, or Can't Hurt Me. And he's got some ridiculous stories, ultra marathon running, like 24-hour runs, 100 mile, like just ridiculous. Ridiculous feats of physical ability. So I'm always curious. 2-hour marathons are ridiculous. Jordan, Ian, and I for the podcast are doing some cold exposure therapy right now, testing that out, seeing what that feels like. You know, a guy I have to bring up because he won last night, Tom Brady. You know, just been an absolute dominant force in the NFL over the past whatever 15 years. He's got 32 playoff wins. The next closest guy is Joe Montana with 16. So I think of when you're talking about, you know, athletes who are performing into their 50s, 60s, 70s, he's a guy that's just keeps absolutely dominating in his sport. It's really incredible.
Yeah. And because I think with him, he's vegan, right?
I don't know his exact diet, Jordan. You might know he does have that book TB12 that I need to read. But he's super diligent with his diet. I know, like, he doesn't even eat tomatoes because they're too acidic. Like some very fine tooth combing between his diet. It's crazy.
Well, and it's interesting because you talked about like technology and Frisbee, but also with nutrition. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like the more we know, the less we know. You know, there's all these supplements now. I just got picked up by Team Noon. So I've been taking their stuff for a couple of years for hydration to help me not cramp when I'm out on the field. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if that stops me from cramping, that's good. But if I'm cramping because I'm missing something else, then that's not good. And so it's just like this balance of everything. And, you know, if you take a certain amount of whatever vitamins, then it throws something else off. And it's just so complex. And I know LeBron James talks about this. He spends like $1 million a year on nutrition and sleeping and the Wim Hof method.
Yeah.
So there's a disc golfer that subscribes to that. And he talks about like taking these cold showers for as long as your body can handle. And I'm not that brave yet. I am sort of getting into some more of that breathing stuff, but, have you done the cold shower therapy?
So yeah, that's part of what Ian, Jordan, and I are doing right now, actually. And we haven't really told anyone about it, but we're doing a little 30-day, we're in lockdown in Ontario here. So we can't come together. So we're trying to find different ways where we can stay, you know, aligned and keep working on different things. So we're doing a Wim Hof daily breathing. And then we're also incorporating the cold exposure. So we're doing cold showers. We're doing cold baths, whatever format we use. And at the end of the 30 days, we're actually going to go to Lake Ontario and jump in there for a couple minutes, see how we've been able to adapt and adjust to these this cold exposure and using the Wim Hof method. So that's super exciting. We'll see. We're going to make a cool YouTube video out of it. It'll be fun. Try and compete with Frisbee Rob on YouTube, you know. But it's amazing. I'm always trying to figure out different ways, and whether it's nutrition, whether it's training, on how to perform better. I think through this show, in 10, 20, 30 years, ideally I want to see if I can become just an incredible athlete through learning from people like yourself. Right. I want to pick your guys' brain. I mean, like, there's just so much that you can do, right? And you, like you just touched on, is there anything specifically you do from a nutrition standpoint other than taking the Nun hydration?
Yeah. Like, I've been pretty bad with food. Full disclosure, like, I travel a lot. Okay. Driven across Canada 4 times, speaking in schools, and I've tried to be diligent on the road. Mm-hmm. But I remember one trip, I had my cooler and I had a Nutribullet and I had a bunch of frozen, fruit and stuff like that, and I'd stop at a gas station, fill up gas, take my Nutribullet inside, plug it in, make a shake. I also tried to freeze a bunch of shakes, and then they were gone within 2 days, and I'm like, well, that's great, but now what? Yeah. So I actually get into fasting quite a bit, intermittent fasting, the last couple years. During COVID, I actually got into cooking. So I was using a lot of HelloFresh, Chef's Plate, good food. Mm-hmm. I tried out a lot of those. I probably cooked 70 or 80 recipes. So I cooked more in like 2 months of COVID than I have my entire life, which was a really good experience. And it helps you appreciate what's going into your food. And I definitely have a sweet tooth. Learned like emotional eating. A lot of that comes from feeling lonely or, eating alone or things like that. And you try and replace that feeling of being lonely with eating the food, and then you connect with the food, and then it brings you comfort. And so it's like, okay, well, if you're eating healthy, but then you're lonely and you're stressed. And so it's trying to manage all of those. You can have people that are eating and exercising, but they have crazy high stress. Well, that's not good. And so if my stress is lowered by maybe eating poorly once in a while, mm-hmm. then, in my mind, I was like, that works. But then how do I ultimately work to a place where I'm eating better? Having a partner now who's super supportive has been really helpful. Just being diligent about setting a routine every day. So I've been doing yoga pretty much every day for the last 3 months. Nice. Trying to get my workout in. Yoga has been transformative because I'm actually thinking about breathing now, and breathing's been a big thing. But yeah, it's just kind of like, there's a lot to balance. You can't know everything about everything. And so I think the biggest thing I've learned is if you can, try to bring in an expert to your team, either hire them, partner with them somehow, because they'll take a lot of the guesswork out of it. And find somebody you trust, to say, like, I'm going to get the best trainer in the world. Well, who is the best trainer in the world, right? It's very subjective. And so just find somebody that you trust, somebody you can work with, and just build that team of people. And so have a nutritionist, have, somebody that can set your programming, have someone that can help coach you, hold you accountable. You have a couple friends that do that.
And good for then, you. Yeah, I love hearing that, the fact that yoga has been had such an impact on you over the past couple of months. I think more than anything this past year, people have identified things that in their life they like and they don't like, and diving headfirst into some of those things, right? Whether it's cooking, obviously that's something that you've found you really enjoy now, clearly, and hopefully that's something that continues moving forward. I think it's always interesting when you can find and discover new things about yourself. I mean, this year has been tough. There's no beating around the bush. It's not ideal, but I think there's a lot of positives that can come from it if you're willing to kind of become introspective and identify some things that you can really benefit from. I'm getting huge into reading right now, trying to do that more and really go on self-improvement ultimately, right? Whether it's cold exposure, whether it's doing some breathing, like those, everything makes a difference, and it's crazy. And like you said, you can't consume all the content. You can't be an expert in everything, but you can do some little things that make some tremendous impacts long term, especially if they become daily habits. I read that Atomic Habits book, and those are factors that just can't be ignored, right?
I'm listening to that one now, and been listening to it for a couple months and slowly going through it. Like when I was on the treadmill, I'd listen to 30, 40 minutes at a time. So, and it's the first book was The Power of Habit. Mm-hmm. And so The Power of Habit was like one of my top 5 books. And then Atomic Habits sort of builds on that. But the way that he sort of puts a spin on it, and he talks about having a better system of making those choices and building those habits. I really love that. And there's so many good nuggets within that. One of the things he talks about too is if you make, I wonder if I can quickly find this quote, because it was an incredible quote actually.
Yeah. Do it up. It's, I also have to, you know, I breezed over it. No pun intended, breezed over, but Drew Brees and Tom Brady met on the field yesterday, and you'll appreciate this because you have kids. But Drew brought his kids out and actually had Tom Brady hang around with them, threw a couple passes. And I just thought that was something that I wanted to share on, you know, the veteran side of things. Obviously, this is something that you're doing, having an impact on kids. 135,000 of them, to be precise. Like, this is it's so cool to see what you're doing. I think, you know, athletes like Tom Brady, obviously they're on this pedestal, but the fact that they're willing to do the same things that you yourself are doing are incredible. So I'm very glad I've been able to bring that to light, and I want you to continue doing that. But I want you to also share this quote that you found now.
Yeah, it's from Atomic Habits. I can't find it. I know I had sent an email to myself, but it's basically like, that which, you know, we make it easy becomes a habit. And so if we, you know, just go grab like some bad food and it just makes, then it just becomes a habit. If we spend the time to cook something, it's a little harder in the beginning, but then that becomes a habit. And so it's like, you know, short-term versus long-term. And it's, my trainer recommends Atomic Habits as well. I've recommended that book to quite a few people. And there's a lot of amazing books. And sometimes I find you can consume too much, and then you have all this knowledge and you're not sure what to do with it. And sometimes there's a really good podcast. I think it was Tim Ferriss. He had a couple guys on who were selling on Amazon. And they have over 100 products now. They make like $90 million a year or something just by doing iterations of products. They don't really care about any of their products. They just come up with things that are going to sell. And they just optimize it. And they only read books based on what they need to learn at the time. And so if they need to learn about HR, then they go read 10 books on HR. Because what I do is I read books. I'm like, oh, I might be interested in that. But if I read a book about something, a topic that isn't applying to me in my life right now, I'll never actually apply it to what I'm doing. So I've been trying to do a bit more of that, where if I'm working on a certain program, like a huge thing I've been working on since May is emotional intelligence.
Okay.
And so what I try and do in schools is just being cognizant of the fact that I'm going to be teaching Frisbee for one day. Sometimes I do a residency at a school for a week, but there's a lot of other things they're going to do. So how can I leave a lasting impact? That's where the physical literacy piece comes in. That's where the resiliency piece comes in, which is, you know, learning to fail, and it's okay to fail, you know, trying. And then the unplugging piece, so getting away from screens, trying to leave some pieces about kindness as well. And so what I want to do with what I'm doing is figure out how to bring emotional intelligence into the fold, because emotional intelligence as an athlete, as, you know, a friend, as a family member, as an organization, has a huge impact. And so with that, we've been, Simon Sinek has some really good books. One I'm reading now is called The Infinite Game. And so if you're playing, you know, a hockey game, that's a finite game because there's rules, there's going to be a set end to it. There's a winner and a loser, but the game of life is an infinite game. Friendships are infinite games. Your relationship is an infinite game. There's no rules. There's not a winner and a loser. And so, you know, looking at the culture, whether it's politically, sports-wise, whatever, that's where people are sort of losing sight of it, because they're saying, like, we're going to win or we're going to beat this. And it's like, but there's no winning. So for me with Frisbee is an infinite game. You know, a competition is a finite game, but the sport of Frisbee is infinite. This is not my sport. It's not even our sport. It's, you know, the sport of Frisbee just happens to be the sport I do. And so if I want to build this for the long term, then it's, how can I do the best I can now and pass that on? It's, you know, one person is not going to be able to grow the sport. So yeah, it's been interesting kind of navigating through that, those pieces. I don't know, there's so much you can learn. So much you can apply. And I don't know, I really just kind of love all that, just that exploration and getting recommendations of books from other people. And I don't know, it's so cool that you're reading that book too. It's such a good book.
Totally. I posted on my LinkedIn a week ago and I just said simply EQ over IQ. Like, I think there's Something to be said for having that emotional intelligence and being able to hold a conversation or, you know, have some empathy with for someone who's going through a tough time or being able to sympathize with others. Like, there's as great as you can be on a test, scoring 2400 on your SAT, you have 99 averages across the board. You know what? That's all fine and dandy. But if you don't know how to hold a conversation or interact with another human being, I don't think you're going anywhere ultimately. And maybe you will, who knows, then that's good on you for doing it. But I think there's a lot to be said for being able to be that person that someone can go to and knows that you're going to be fully present with them, willing to have a conversation and excited to learn about who they are and what they're doing.
Yeah. And the way that we explain emotional intelligence is it helps you become more intelligent about your emotions. But your emotions also help unlock your intelligence. And so you'll never be able to explore what your potential is if you don't have and don't build your EQ. And your IQ is pretty much fixed. You can go up and down a little bit, but your EQ is for life. And so it's been pretty amazing because we have like 30,000 emotions. We only really ever express 12, even though we feel hundreds a day. And wow. So, you know, the work I've been doing, it's, you know, we've had adults break down. We've had kids break down. It's amazing just navigating them through because, you know, we get in that fight or flight mode. And that's a lot of what like Wim Hof is doing is helping you breathe so you can work through those moments. Mm-hmm. But emotional intelligence helps you move from the amygdala to the prefrontal cortex. So you go from that fight or flight to sort of that, you know, endless ability to be creative and to think. And so, you know, if you're an athlete, you know, you have all these moments when you're on the field or on the ice. And so if you can quickly move through those, it's like you process that feeling. And we don't say a feeling is good or bad. We say it's either contracting or expanding. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like these little switches around this. It's through neurogamification. So just like you get better at hockey by practicing stick handling or shooting the puck, you can get better at EQ by talking about emotions. And so I had a game play yesterday. I'm going to be doing some coaching today. We have some coaching tomorrow. And so it's been a lot, like, you know, asking people, you know, when was the last time that you felt this or what happens when you feel this? And just working through a lot of those different moments. And just knowing that just because you're doing something doesn't mean that you're not, not dealing with it in your personal life as well. That's sometimes why we do things. Yeah. Right. Why do I try to get kids away from screens? Because I see the impact spending time on screens has had in my life and the impact it's had by taking time away from screens. And there's so many things that are linked to like reducing screen time increases empathy. And so by looking at people, by working on those and developing those mirror neurons, we actually understand how to build empathy with people. But we have to do that by looking up from those screens. And so it's been tough with COVID. With masks, but at least we have Zoom that we can, although it's tough, right? Because I'm looking at the camera.
Still too.
But then if I look at you, then I'm looking down. So it's how do we?
I just focus on you. I don't even worry about the camera. <It's there. laughs> That unplugged challenge is something I wanted to touch on as well. It's removing screens from the bedroom, an hour before bed, and at the dinner table. Those are the three big ones, the big pillars, at least, right? That's something I've been striving towards for a while now. It's hard with social media. I mean, obviously, you're well aware of building a business through social media and what it takes. And, you know, when you got people messaging you, you're trying to coordinate interviews, et cetera, it's not easy to do sometimes, but it's so important. And it makes a tremendous impact on your day-to-day activities, how you go about it, sceduling that. Just an hour before, you know, I the way I do it is if I'm watching TV or something, I put on my blue light blocking glasses. As soon as the sort of light goes down, that's when I know it's time to do that. And I get into my nighttime routine, same as a morning routine, right? And I think all these things, like bringing it back to atomic habits, it's habit stacking, right? So you know that in the morning after you brush your teeth, you have your shower, you comb your hair, you drink your coffee, whatever it is, right? It's the same at night, but this is removing those screen times. And, you know, right now people are spending just obnoxious amounts of time in front of a screen because of this. And it's unfortunate. I'm not excited for what that ends up looking like in the future after this pandemic's over.
Yeah. And I think if the pandemic had only been a couple months, it would have been okay. But because it's been almost a year, And a lot of people are not aware of that idea of habit stacking. So I think a lot of people are in habits. And there's a nice quote, habits start off as cobwebs and end up as chains. Mm. And so in the beginning, it's easy to sort of break a habit and get out of it. But when it's instilled, I think the power of habit talks about, it takes like 200 and some days to actually build a habit. A lot of people are like, oh, it takes 60 days or 30 days, but they're like, actually, it takes 260.
Wow.
And it kind of blew my mind, but it makes sense because for a while you just get into it. It's your routine. Something throws off your routine, you go right back. But then you bring habit stacking in, and it's like, if I'm trying to do 200 deadlifts, well, my goal is to do one deadlift and then another deadlift. It's not to do 200. Mm-hmm. And so it's just that, you know, take that minimum action that you need. And, you know, if setting the alarm on your coffee machine at night then prompts you to wake up in the morning, and then you're like, okay, coffee, this, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of the Unplugged Challenge came from Philip Zimbardo. So he's 87 now. He's an incredible, incredible man. He did a TED talk called The Demise of Guys. Mm-hmm. And I listened to the TED talk probably 8 years ago. And one of the stats in the TED talk came from Jane McGonigal, who does a lot of research in the video game industry. And she found that by the time the average kid, mostly boys, but by the time the average kid is 18, they will have played 10,000 hours of video games, like 2/3 of that in isolation. And so, you know, Malcolm Gladwell talks about 10,000 hours as sort of, you know, the number to get to for proficiency, right? And it's whether it's 11,000, 9,000, whatever. So 10,000 hours is 3 hours every day for 10 years, right? It's a lot of time. And so the average kid is playing 3 hours a day of video games for 10 years. Like, that's mind blowing. And so the idea is, okay, well, if we can switch some of those things or set better habits. And for a while, the advice was, you know, 1 hour of TV every day.
Yeah.
And so it switched to 1 hour of screen time, but you know, you can't really do that. And so it's not necessarily about setting limits. And in the beginning it was, you know, no screens for 1 day. And kids would do that. I remember there was a 5-year-old at a school in Ontario, and his parents were so blown away because he went 2 weeks without watching a movie. And I'm like, okay, that's cool, but why is a 5-year-old setting his own limits? Like, yeah. If the challenge is for this, and he talks to the parents, and then it's like, let's do it as a family, and let's just not have this 5-year-old by himself in the corner while we watch a movie. Mm-hmm. And so it morphed from that to what it is now, which is try to set better limits. And what I try to get kids to do is say, okay, you know, we want to start our day with sleep. We don't want to end our day with sleep, because too often we try to squeeze in sleep. And sleep is important for everybody, but especially for kids.
Yeah.
And so we try to start a day with sleep, and we have school, we have chores, we have family time, whatever. If you only have 20 minutes at the end of the day, then go, you know, on a screen. If you don't have time, then you don't have time for a screen. Mm-hmm. And so, because it's what's happening is it's rewiring your brains, right? That dopamine hit. It's something like, you know, for an hour of video games, that's like the same as, you know, an hour of orgasms. You get that much dopamine hitting you. So why wouldn't you want to do it?
Yeah.
The average kid spends 44 hours in front of a screen for every 30 minutes they get with their dad. And so it's like, you know, whatever parents and whatever people are telling them, they go on YouTube, and then it's just totally being erased. And so there's real impact from this. It's not just, you know, oh, we used to read newspapers and not pay attention to people on the train. It's like, well, no, it's the constant stream of what's coming through. It is very different. And the difference is a lot of what we're seeing, you know, whatever apps they are, people trying to monetize that as much as possible. Yeah. The infinite scroll, right? That was the guy that invented it. I think it was on The Social Dilemma. He's like, that was horrible. Mm-hmm. But if he didn't invent it, somebody else would have.
Yeah.
And so it's just, how can they get an extra 30 minutes? It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just business. Like, how can each app get an extra 30 minutes of our time? And if you look at them as a habit, right, usually habits will start when we have a cue. The cue is that notification. And so if you have, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, there's 4 different notifications that possibly could pop up. And then you're being pulled away from whatever you're doing now and totally distracted. So it's really difficult. We're all sort of in the same boat. But they've also made it so we almost feel like we can't live without it, because we're missing out on what our friends are doing. And
FOMO. You know,
we don't share something, but our friends are sharing something. Well, how do we get that, right? It's So it is a challenge. It's not going away, but how do we sort of optimize it? And for me, it became a real thing a couple of years ago when I was looking at the time I was spending on screens and saying, okay, if I became Frisbee Rob, if I set world records by spending time playing Frisbee, and this was, you know, back in like 2002, 2003, and 2004, when I really started getting in and putting in the time to practice, that's really where I got the foundation. If I'm now spending 6-7 hours a day in front of a screen or more, because part of it's my job, well, I'm not spending the time throwing. And if I make the time for throwing, then what else suffers, right? You can't, mm-hmm. We only have 24 hours in a day. We're not adding more time. So where are we subtracting time? Yeah. A lot of time it's sleep. A lot of time it's with our friends or family. So it's just trying to figure out like what matters, what I want, how I can get there. And just, I think always just looking back and saying, okay, did that work? Maybe not. How can I mix it up a bit? So
yeah,
it's not easy, but it is worth it. And we get one shot at this, right? So let's try and do our best.
You're totally right. And it is endless. And, you know, you could scroll through TikTok for 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and you will always have something coming up next on that screen when your thumb slides up. So it's unfortunate. And like you said, it's a business. They're not, you know, whether their intentions are good or bad, they're just trying to make money. It's a unfortunate time, but you know what? I think it's people like yourself that are, you know, showing what can be done when you focus and make your priorities and, you know, try and focus on being present, doing things that are with family, with friends, that are social, that are going to benefit you long term, and not just hitting the like button on that next Instagram post. Right.
Have you watched much of Mr. Beast?
I have not. No, I actually don't use YouTube that much, to be honest. Tell me about him though.
So he's super entertaining. You know, a lot of kids in schools are wearing his stuff, mm-hmm. His swag, his merchandise.
He just opened his hamburger joints across all down in the States, right?
I don't know. He does a lot of wild things. Like he literally spends like $1 million a video.
Okay.
He'll do some wild things. Like he posted a video of himself saying a certain word 250,000 times and it took like 15 hours or something. But he makes like 90 million a year on YouTube. But before he got on YouTube, he was a big video gamer.
Okay.
And looking back, and I can't remember if this was like in an interview or something a while ago, but he said that looking back from the time he was like 13 to 19, like all he did was play video games. And so he's like, you know, if kids are always like, how can I get into YouTube? He's like, don't do that. Cause he's like, I wasted like, you know, childhood playing video games, and now he's big and, you know, making a huge impact. And so a thing I always like to tell kids as well is instead of watching somebody do something, you know, go do it yourself. Mm-hmm. So go watch like a 2-minute video or something, or 2 minutes of my video about Frisbee, but then go spend 20 minutes playing it. Mm-hmm. It's like try to spend more time doing instead of watching. And so it can be tough sometimes, you know, with the NHL, with pro sports, they want you to watch. But if you watch a hockey game one night, a football game another night, that's 3 hours of hockey or 3 hours of football that you just watched. And so one thing I try to challenge, and I always get a big gasp from the kids or from the teachers, but I'm like, you know, watch the third period. Don't watch the first two periods, only watch the third period. Mm-hmm. Or even just watch SportsCenter, watch the highlights. Yeah. You'll still get to see some cool things, because literally every day we're missing thousands of things that we can't possibly watch. And so we're trying to say, okay, well, let's try and watch one of them. Mm-hmm. If that works for some people, great. If it doesn't, then, you know, maybe make time for what your thing is. And so I think for everybody, it's different. You know, not everyone wants to sort of optimize their life and get to the point that, you know, maybe you and I want to get to, and that's okay. Right. Not everybody wants to set a world record. Like I have friends he won a world championship, my friend Peter, in like 1974. Mm-hmm. And then that was enough for him. And he's like basically never competed since then. He runs an organization. He gets people playing Frisbee with their dogs, which is great, but that was enough. Whereas there's other people who are in their 60s and 70s still going, still pushing the limits. And so I think it's just figuring out where you fit in that piece and just owning it and just saying like, this is me. I can't try and be somebody else or, you know, follow other people. Let's just go do my thing.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting you bring up watching a hockey game and only the third period. It's like the score is not going to change whether you watch that game or not. Despite whatever you may think or superstitions that you have, the score of that Vancouver Canucks game tonight in Calgary is not going to change whether I watch it or not. So it goes back to just being present and making sure that you're focusing on the things that you want to really prioritize in your life.
Did you ever watch Fever Pitch with Jimmy Fallon?
No.
So, and it was funny because when they actually filmed it, so he's a huge Red Sox fan in this movie. And the year that they actually filmed it was the year that the Red Sox won the pennant for the first time in like 80 some years. And so the movie, actually, they could have a piece in the movie where they're celebrating with the team. But there's a scene where they're out for dinner after the Red Sox lost. Mm-hmm. And all the fans are like just so bummed out and just like really down on themselves. And they look over and they see some of the Red Sox players having dinner, laughing, joking, whatever. And they're like, how can they be like so happy? Like, we just lost a game. It's like it's their job. Like, it's not their life. It doesn't define who they are.
Yeah.
And so it just made me sort of realize like, okay, well, like how am I defining my life? What am I getting caught up in? And yeah. Something you'll hear people be like, oh, lost last night. Or it's like, really? What did you do? But it's interesting. Like, and I love so many people who are huge fans of sports, grew up with a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about Patrick Waugh was sort of my favorite hockey player before they traded him. But it's, yeah, sometimes it's interesting how we get caught up in that and how, but that's the whole point of it, is they want us to identify with them because then we feel like we're part of that community. And I think especially the last year we've seen that. It's like, you take away certain communities, whether it's your sports community or, you know, a group that you normally gather with people, have you replaced that with a different community? Have you taken that community somewhere else, maybe online? And I think the answer varies. I think there's a lot of people that have lost their community. I think there's a lot of people that have found a new community. So it's been an interesting time, like you mentioned, for sure.
Yeah. And everyone's vying for your attention, right? Whether it's the Abs, whether it's the sports teams, whether it's your mom and dad, and you just got to make those decisions. And hopefully you're choosing your mom or dad most of the time, but you know what, there's enough time in the day. If you really want to do things, you can establish a list and go down it. We have two questions left. One being from our Instagram that comes from @Mamad_Marco. And his question to you is, how can we add more speed and spin in our throw? And where does that necessarily stem from?
Good question. So a big thing that I teach that not a lot of people teach, but it's a core part of the Frisbee, is snap your wrist more. Mm. The more spin we put on the disc, the more stable it's going to be, the longer it's going to glide. And it is not a natural thing. There's a lot of disc golf coaches, a lot of disc golfers, when they talk about throwing, they totally neglect the wrist action. And freestyle is a sport in Frisbee that you can do tricks with. And so a big part of freestyle is putting spin on the disc, which comes from snapping your wrist. And so that's what I would say, is snap your wrist more. Just think about snapping harder. But you can, you know, strengthen your forearms, strengthen your wrist, get better grip strength, work on your fingers, you know, mobility in your wrist, then you can actually more spin. It's just like spinning a top on a table. Gotcha. The more spin you have, the longer it spins. So the more spin we put on the disc, the longer it's going to glide. Because aerodynamically, you know, it creates lift based on low pressure, high pressure. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. You're using just that, put spin by snapping.
Using that electrical engineering degree from Dalhousie, eh?
It's would have been interesting to go, you know, into like aeronautical or something, but
yeah,
didn't know how far I was going to go with Frisbee.
Yeah, well, and now you're known as Frisbee Rob. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Rob, this has been an amazing conversation. I really appreciate you reaching out, you coming on, sharing your wisdom, insights. I've learned a lot in this hour. I'm sure everyone who listens will feel the exact same way. The way we wrap up every episode on the Athletes Podcast is we ask the athlete, coach, nutritionist, whoever it is, what their one piece of advice would be to the next generation of athletes. Rob McLeod, Frisbee Rob, what would yours be?
The biggest thing I'd say is find your thing, and your thing today might be different from your thing in 5 years, but find your thing. If you find your thing and you want to do that for the rest of your life, then do that. If you find your thing and decide that I don't want to do this anymore, then that's okay too. But, someone else's thing is not your thing. So the biggest thing I can give advice to, I'd say, is to find your thing.
I like it. This is, been an amazing conversation again. Can't thank you enough. For those of you who are listening, find your thing. That's the way we're going to wrap up this episode. Rob, thanks again for coming on. We'll look forward to chatting and seeing the way disc golf continues to grow over the next decade. I'm excited to see what the results are like.
Me too, man. Thanks so much for having me on.
Awesome. That's it. That's the show. Thank you guys for listening to the 66th episode of the Athletes Podcast featuring Rob McLeod. Such a great time. Thank you to Rob for coming on. Don't forget, the AP is also recorded online as well, so you can watch our episodes on YouTube if you prefer to do that. You should also check out our new website. Jordan has put a bunch of hard work into it. Check it out. We're blogging, adding some more value, hopefully, for you. And if you want something in particular, let us know and we'll see if we can do it. You know, that's what we're all about. I am asking that if you enjoy the show, to please share your review online where you consume your AP content. We will be sharing some of these positive reviews throughout the next coming weeks. You know, this is something we want to continue to do. Share support, share the love that we're receiving. This is a great chat for any disc sport player, coach, fan out there who wants to get some insights from a professional. Honestly, I think there's a lot of people that will benefit from listening to the way Rob approaches not only athletics, but life in general. I want to thank you guys again for listening. You can find me on Instagram at DaveStark1, Jordan at JordanMaslin4, and at TheAthletesPodcast for all our other social medias. If you enjoy the show, share it with your friends or an athlete that you think is going to benefit. And again, much love to you all. Take care and enjoy the rest of your day. And I hope you have a great week. Bye.